to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jodi Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hi, Jodi. How are you?
Good morning, Eleni. It's nice to see you on a rainy day.
Nice to see you as well. When this episode comes out, hopefully you'll be in much better weather in Miami for the WWD CEO Summit. Are you excited?
I am so excited. I'm like giddy and weird about it because it's always such a milestone for Base Beauty. It's a very significant event in our industry. It holds a lot of meaning for me in terms of like tracking the growth of our business. We know so many people in the room now. We have clients in the room. And I'm like really just, I can't sleep. I feel like it's like almost like first day of school.
That's amazing. The network is one of my favorite parts to watch its growth over the years, having been here for a while, and your team as well, your business development team, which is so fun. Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a great trip. I'm excited for you to get there. You better bring your sunscreen, of course. You always do.
Of course, multiple versions of sunscreen. It's totally already set aside. And I mean, I guess that's an okay segue to talking about Chris Collins, because when I think about his career, it kind of makes me giddy too. He was for 20 years a model and brand ambassador for Ralph Lauren, which is really an unheard of term for anybody to be a model, a working model, let alone to have such a significant relationship with one brand.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. That's an incredibly long stretch in the modeling world. Wow.
He has amazing memories. This is such a great episode. He shares about modeling. He talks about what you would expect to find in his wardrobe closet, but what isn't there. And of course, he loves collecting fragrance.
Interesting. That goes well with his scent line, The World of Chris Collins.
Yeah. So we talk a lot about memories in this episode, and specifically scent memories. And, you know, a fragrance is so powerful. It can like take your brain right back to a time or place in an instant. Do you have any significant scent memories?
I totally do. I have many. I think probably the strongest one that comes to mind is L'Oreal Elnette hairspray. I love like big volume looks for styling my hair. And this was the first bottle of hairspray I bought when I discovered that you needed to put hairspray in when you were teasing your hair and getting it to hold. And I've used so many hairsprays since then. But every time I have a fresh bottle of this, I'm totally brought back.
Was that like a high school hair teasing?
Yes, thing? It was. But I still tease my hair. I love it. And it's still my favorite hairspray. How about you?
I think most significant scent memory is a fragrance my mom used to wear when I was probably like in my middle school and teens, high school. It's YSL Paris. I think they still sell it. And maybe she started wearing it in elementary school, because that would be the 80s, which would make a lot of sense. Like, she wore a lot of fragrance, and that was like, you know, everyone had their own scent. Uh-huh. So this is her scent. And if I walk past somebody and they're wearing it, I know it in an instant.
That's amazing. It's so powerful what the scents can bring us back to. Well, let's get to this walk down scent memory lane. Here is episode 257 with Chris Collins.
Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. We are a career journey podcast talking about what it's like to define success and reach for it in the beauty and wellness industries. Today, we are continuing our influencer-themed quarter. We are thrilled to be joined by Chris Collins, former 20-year brand ambassador for Ralph Lauren. The world of influencing runs deep for him. He's currently the CEO and founder of The World of Chris Collins, taking his appreciation for fine fragrance and scent storytelling to the next level. He's also the co-founder of The League of Gentlemen. I'm excited to dive into the conversation about his career from polo shirts to perfume, all on episode 257. Hey, Chris, welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty.
Hi, Jodi. Nice to be here.
I want to give a shout out to Asha Coco, who connected us together.
That's right. That's
She's
right.
a super connector, lovely yeah. human, loves fragrance. So I'm very glad that yes. she made that introduction.
Very glad. She's been a godsend since I started working with her. So, yeah.
This is a career journey show. So we're going to go all the way back to the beginning or middle okay. beginning. And let's think about Chris at age 11.
Oh.
You have a fantasy about, you know, what your life, what type of life you'll have in a career in the distance. What were you thinking about? What was on your mind at that time?
11, sixth grade. At that time, it was just all sports. I grew up in a house full of athletes. My dad was my coach. I played everything from baseball, basketball, football. All I can think about eat, drink, sleep, sport. So at that time, that was all that was I was consumed by. I was pretty good. I was a pretty good athlete. So, you know, it was a good time to be that age.
And through high school, let's say 11th grade, were you thinking, I'm going to make a career out of sports?
Well, I think all us as kids, we think that at some point, and then as you get older, the reality starts to kick in that you're probably not going to go pro. Yeah, I was like the captain of the basketball team, and, you know, played football and basketball in high school. I had like the Letterman jacket and all that stuff. So, but I was also, I grew up in a house full of teachers. So I was also pretty smart, not because I was just like naturally gifted smart, so that my parents always had me doing exercises on how to study. So I learned how to study early. So I kind of started to figure out that, you know, the pros weren't in my horizon. And then I started leading on the books.
That's very interesting that you were taught how to study. This is something that most kids aren't taught, right? They're just expected to figure it out.
Right.
What do you remember of that skill set and that toolbox that your parents gave you?
I remember when, so I don't know if you know, but I have a twin. I have a twin brother. So him and I, we grew up doing everything together, right? But we, you know, my parents were, you know, not lenient, but they let us go out and hang and play and stuff. But before we could go do anything, before we can go to the movies, before we can go out and play, we had to do like our 12 times tables, right? So we had to like do the timetables chart. And I learned very quickly that through repetition, by just writing, I was actually learning as I was, you know, remembering or memorizing it as I was doing the exercise. So I think I learned how to study based on doing everything repetitiously as a kid, because my parents, we always had to do something, whether it was like vocabulary out of the dictionary or the times tables. I was always writing, and that's how I learned how to study, even in college. I would listen to my, I would write everything down. I would video record the lectures, like everything through repetition for me. That's how I learned.
That's a really great philosophy for any parent. I have a 16-year-old and a 13-year-old, mm-hmm. and I think COVID got a little bit in the way of developing those skills sort of in that middle phase when my kids were sort of entering that phase of when you have a lot of homework.
Yeah.
And no one's teaching them this, how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So as a parent, I have to figure it out, right? Yeah. And I don't know that my kids at this age really want to hear from me about it. Right? I sort of missed that window, but I really love this idea. It makes total sense. I would imagine total that sense. It's really applicable to just about anything, not even schoolwork, but you know, how to learn a new skill at work,
mm-hmm.
right? It's just, you just have to actually spend the time. It's not a magic bullet.
Figuring out taping my lectures and listening to it, that was just, I just figured out like, when I listen to music, I just learn all the words fast. So why don't I just listen to a lecture while I'm writing the notes and rewriting the notes again? Everything through repetition, because some people are just naturally gifted studiers. I wasn't, but I figured out a way, and then it just worked.
I want to also share with you that this varsity jacket, I mentioned I have a 16-year-old, this varsity jacket has not changed in design since I don't know when it was invented. It's exact same jacket that my son has, that my husband had, you know, different colors, and that, you know, in the 1950s in the movies that the kids are wearing. It's wild how this one piece of apparel has not changed in all these decades.
Back in high school, it was like a king's robe to wear that leather jacket. And then in college, the leather jacket, I mean, it was everything. I still have one.
You cannot get rid of this. This is a very important memento. I remember I went to a different high school than the person I ended up marrying, but we started dating in high school. So getting to wear his jacket, even though I wasn't from the town, like it's such a big deal. That's it's so like meaningful.
80s movie, like, do you want to be my girlfriend? Here's like, wear my leather, my varsity jacket. So cute.
It's the same. It's the same today, which is wild. I think somebody should study how this one piece, this one style has been able to survive through so much change. Okay, we'll find someone in the fashion industry to do that research for us. I have some friends who teach at FIT, so I'll ask around. Okay, so let's talk about entering the career world.
Yeah.
By that time, what were your aspirations?
So when I went to college, I was actually pre-med. I was studying biology and psychology at the same time. Thought I was going to be a doctor. Actually, through the years, like my junior year, I then started to kind of revert back to sports. So I thought about physical therapy. But, you know, it was really hard to get into PT school. Like I applied to a few, you know, maybe 5 to 10 schools and I didn't get into any. So I said, you know what, let me just take a year off. You know, just take a break, because I was just like going every year studying, going to summer classes at universities back home. And then during that time that I took the year off is when I met Ralph Lauren. So I said, okay, well, you know, let me try this for a little bit. I don't know where this will take me. You know, I'm a smart guy. I could just, you know, just do it for a little bit and go back to school. And never ended up going back to school.
Okay, well, we need to hear that origin story. When you say you met Ralph Lauren, you met the brand or you met the human?
I met someone who worked for the brand who then eventually introduced me to Ralph. I sat in his office before I shot anything and just had a conversation. And he would ask me exactly what you're asking me. What were your aspirations? What do you want to do? Because he likes the people that he works with to just always be well-rounded and have other things that, you know, they have interests in. So when I told him my story, he, you know, he loved it. And 20 years from that day, I was working with him.
That's wild.
Wild.
The life of a model is not an easy one. No. You never know where you're going to be tomorrow. Mm-mm. Until maybe midnight the night before. Mm-hmm. Were you working with other brands and campaigns at this time, or was there some sort of exclusivity?
For a while, there was an exclusivity, but for the most part, it was just working with Ralph. It was like an unspoken like loyalty between us for some mm-hmm. reason. You know, there were other companies that would want to work with me, the offer, but then I had to kind of weigh what would it be worth to kind of mess up this relationship, because I had worked with them from 21 until 43, 44. So it was a long run. It was a long run, a good run, but a long one.
Let's examine this a little bit, because a lot of, you know, the platform that you have now, you know, was built up because of this longevity that you had in a career that actually has mm-hmm. zero longevity, right? Like people blip in, they blip out. What do you think it was the reason why the brand was loyal to you and the reason why you were loyal to the brand? Because you're speaking about a unwritten contract. You made you made these decisions based on, I really like this. Mm-hmm. I want to be loyal here, even though at some points I don't actually have any exclusivity. But you didn't. Mm-hmm. You wanted to maintain this. They wanted to obviously maintain something with you as well. Right. Tell me what you think outlined that dynamic and allowed that to happen.
Well, I know my reasons, but I can assume what their reasons were. And it was because, you know, I represented the brand well. You know, I would go to events. I went to the Met Gala on behalf of Ralph Lauren like 10 years ago. I would, you know, I spoke well. You know, I didn't get in trouble. You know, I was just like the guy who represented with Ralph Lauren, what the ethos of his brand was. So that's why it was very important that I met him and had a conversation with him before I actually started working with him. And then for me, you know, to be affiliated with such a prestigious brand, it was just, you know, it was, I couldn't have, you know, played out the scenario any better, you know, to say, you know, what do you do? Yeah, you know, I'm a brand ambassador for Ralph Lauren. I mean, one of the most prestigious American brands ever. And then it was also a learning experience, which I did not know would actually help me in the career that I'm in now. But I took a lot from working with Ralph, both indirectly and directly. So it was all, I guess, part of the grand plan, if you will.
If we look at this a little deeper and we compare it to your aspirations as a kid, you were on a team.
I was on a team.
And you were a really strong player for this team. You were a leader, right?
And can I tell you something? My first ever photo shoot with Ralph Lauren, I had a sweater on with a big varsity P. So there you go. It all came around full circle.
Right. So you're talking about being that person that's reliable, being the person that the rest of the people on the team can know is going to play the game well, show up, put their heart into it. create a strong lasting impression. All of this is what you want in a teammate in any sport.
That's right. Yeah.
And you had much more longevity in the sport of modeling than any of your peers would ever have had in, you know, going to an actual sports team.
When I talk to kids all the time, and especially to parents, I always say how important or how good it could be to have the kids play sports, because there's so many things that you learn, things that you probably don't even realize that you're learning: leadership, being a great teammate, showing up on time, performing, just like you said. Like, all those things for me were very important. And I guess I took those things with me without even knowing that they were with me. But those are the things that you learn when you play sports. And I play them all my life. I mean, literally all my life.
Well, let's talk about, so you retired from that team. Why mm-hmm. stop modeling? What reason did you have, or was it even like a conscious decision?
Well, I got to tell you, towards like year 20, I started to have this itch that there's something else. I didn't know what it was, but I was starting to really get itchy. I was like, I gotta figure something else out. So I left New York in 2014, I want to say. I moved to London for a little bit, thinking I was going to go there and like figure some things out. Didn't figure anything out. Came back to New York.
Learned nothing.
Actually, it was a great experience living in London. I'm not gonna downplay it. It was a fantastic experience, but I knew that New York was a city I needed to be in. And then shortly thereafter, you know, I was walking down the street with a friend of mine, and her father was a perfumer. And, you know, she asked me, she said, "Chris, if there's anything that you would do, like, what would it be outside of, like, modeling? What would you do?" And I said, "Man, if I could figure out a way to create my own fragrances, that would be really cool." And she was like, yeah, that would be cool. But neither one of us knew how the hell to actually start or what to do.
Can I pause you there?
Yeah.
Before your friend asked this question, was creating fragrances something that was on your mind, like, in the past?
No, it wasn't. But I've always loved fragrance. Like, even as a kid, you know, even back when my dad used to wear fragrance, I used to wear his fragrance, and I used to look at the packaging, and I used to be so into it. And then in college, I had my whatever level of collecting fragrances. Like, now people got 300. Back then I had like 10, 15, and I was a lot for a college kid. Mm-hmm. So I was always in love with it. So the thing that I love ended up being my calling, and it was always in front of me. Sometimes the things that are meant for you are right in front of you, but sometimes you can't see it. Maybe because it's too close. Maybe you need to step back a little bit. Maybe you need to move to London for a year. Maybe there's something that has to happen for you to realize, like, I was going to say, holy, this thing was right in front of me the whole time, you know? So I just think it was always meant to be. Like, it was written already.
Let's go back in time 1 second, because you mentioned having a collection of fragrances in college.
Yeah.
This might be a stereotype of young people in college, but often they're very heavy-handed with the application of fragrance.
Yes.
How does one teach themselves how to put on the right amounts? Not too little, not too much.
Well, first of all, you got to wear the right fragrance. Because if you wear a lot of the right fragrance, more times than not, a lot of people are not going to complain. But you just have to wear enough so it's not, I mean, you're around a lot of people in college. You're in class, you're in study hall, you're in all these places, the team. And I was always the kid known on campus as the one who smelled good. You know, I didn't really care about, you know, it's so funny that I ended up in fashion, because I don't really care about, like, clothes. I'm not like a big shopper. Like, if you saw my closet, you'd be shocked. You'd be like, this is all the clothes you had? Everyone says the same thing. And I'm like, you know, I'm more of, like, pieces rather than, like, a lot, right? And to me, smelling good was just more important than dressing well or looking good or whatever. So, you know, that's kind of like I said, this obsession was like in front of me the whole time, and I didn't even realize it.
Okay, so now how does one actually start a business in fragrance? So you had this, obviously, love affair and passion for fragrance for a long time. You had this change of scenery. It's going to London, right? Which is really important, right? Changing our scenery helps us change our point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Then you come back and your friend asks you this really important question that you answered in a really, very honest way. Then what?
Okay. So let me back up a little bit about London. So I'm a huge believer in, like, divine intervention, right? Wherever you're supposed to be, you may not know why you're supposed to be there, but you're supposed to be there at that given time. So I moved to London. I don't know anyone. And then a friend of mine that I played basketball with back in the city, just recreational, he said, man, you got to meet my aunt. You know, she lives in London, American woman. She's so cool. Like, she was in banking. And she was like, she became my mentor. And she was the person that said, what do you want? What do you want to do? Let me help you. Let me help you figure it out. She helps a lot of people. Her name is India. She's like incredible. And I said, I don't know how or why I want to do this, but I really want to start creating my own fragrances. So she said, this is what you're going to do. Here's the layout. You're going to go to the south of France and you're going to call these fragrance houses and you're just going to show up. And that's exactly what I did. It's like people ask me all the time, like, where do I start? How do I start? And the truth is, I don't know. It's different for everyone. It's a different journey for every single person. For me, you know, I had to be a little crazy. I had to, like, you know, go to the south of France and I had to go to Grasse and I had to go to Mougins and I had to say, listen, I have nothing to show you. I have no concept. I have nothing. But will you talk to me and help me figure out how to start making fragrance? And a couple of people slammed the door, which is I expected. But then a couple of companies were like, I don't know why I want to do this for you, but come on and sit down and let's do this. And then that's how it all started.
Chris, I love the your ability to just accept that some doors were going to close. I think sports teaches you that, right? That teaches you how to win and how to lose.
You're going
to
lose some.
And that's a gift to learn that so young. Right? I would imagine in modeling, it's the same, or acting, any performance, right?
Anything in life, everything, no matter what it is, you're going to lose. There are going to be some decisions against you. There are going to be some for you. And that's the way I live life. But you can't be afraid not to be told no, because then you'll be paralyzed.
Right. Then you won't take any action, which is then you can't be whole. Right.
Right.
Let's talk about life as an influencer, because you have the world of modeling where people are, you know, putting you on a pedestal, but they can't, then 20 years ago, they couldn't connect with you the way they can now on social. Right. So it's sort of a different landscape, but you're on this pedestal as this known entity in modeling. Now you can bring that persona to social media and people can meet you in a different way while you're modeling. Now you have, so you have that platform. Now you have the brand, you have these other programs that you're building to build a network and support other people.
Yeah.
Okay. So how much of your, like, is there an influencer persona, Chris, that's different than the human on the other side of the screen, Chris? And do you have to sort of build boundaries and walls to be whole in your real life versus your persona life?
Well, I think, like, for me, I had to kind of break it down, because the word influencer is used so much. Like, it almost becomes, you know, not meaningless, but it's just used all the time. And what I had to kind of do was, like, break it down to, okay, what does that mean? And I think I learned during my years at Ralph Lauren that I had influence, right? I had people that would stop me in the street and say, oh, I saw you in an ad. I remember the sweater you wore and I bought it and it was great and I felt good. And I mean, this would happen to me all the time, all over the world. And that's when I started to realize that I had influence. I wasn't an influencer, but I had influence. I had people would kind of listen to what I had to say. People would follow some of the things that I did or wore or my advice. And that, you know, that's an honor, you know, that most of us now, I don't know how many people actually understand that part of it. Now influencer is being an influencer is a occupation. I mean, people make a lot of money doing that. I did not make a lot of money doing that, but I understood that people respected my opinion. And then knowing that, once I went into fragrance or whatever it is I was going to do, I knew that I had a little bit of, for lack of a better word, influence on people to understand, like, what part of this, you know, crazy world I wanted to talk about. And it just so happened I just chose fragrance.
So let's talk about a topic that's really important in my career. And as I talk more about it with others, I see how it plays an important role. I'm curious if it's bubbled up for you, which is empathy. I'm a naturally empathetic person. I can just sort of automatically like zap into the shoes of that end user customer, you know, as we're talking with clients and stuff about marketing. Mm-hmm. And what I found is that my team is also empathetic. We've actually studied it. We did EQ testing to measure empathy. Mm-hmm. And what we saw is that these really rich empathetic moments when we're thinking about that end user customer, that's what creates success for the work that we do. So I want to really start to unravel this for others and learn more about it. Mm-hmm. Since fragrance is so emotional, right? It's so abstract. I'm curious if empathy plays a role in your decision making, your vision, or the way that you build your brand.
Well, empathy plays a huge role in my life, period. I'm like you, I'm what you call an empath. The only negative to being an empath is that you attract narcissists. Do you know that?
I did not know that. Is this proven?
Yeah, it's proven.
Wow.
Can I go into my psychology days now?
Please, yeah.
Okay. So in order for a narcissist to survive, they have to feed. And the only people they can feed off of are empaths, because we understand, we're givers, we're sympathetic, we're all those things. So that's the only negative, and I've come across a few of those narcissists in my life. It took me a while to kind of figure out who was who. But yes, back to fragrance. You have to be. You know, when I first launched, I was trying to make fragrance that make everyone happy, until I realized that that's impossible. You can't make everyone happy. If I made a fragrance for you and your sister did not like it, then I would go back to the lab and try to change it so that your sister would like it and you would like it. But what will happen now is your sister would like it and you wouldn't like it. So I was like, okay, this is not working. So then I just had to make fragrance that I love. I had to tell stories that were true and honest, and hope that people will kind of understand and follow that. But I like to tell stories that people can relate to, that people understand, you know, not being afraid to talk about sensuality and fragrance. And I know that word is thrown around a lot, but you can really feel like in my fragrances, like these are like either experiences or fantasies that I've had. And I like to bring you along the journey for you to tap into it yourself. So I think that that played a huge role into my style of fragrance and the branding and the marketing and all of it.
You just taught me something new about empathy and the feeder narcissist. And as you were telling me the story, I was thinking, wow, this is the equation for casting on reality TV, right? You have to have the narcissist, but then you have to have the empathetic person. Then you have to, then it will create conflict eventually, because it'll be too much, right? It will be overload.
Right.
And now I understand how the shows are cast, because, you know, it's an equation, right? The way you just expressed it as an equation.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do one more question from me, and then we'll move to our after show.
Sure.
We talked about being a model and this, like the lifestyles, mm-hmm. you know, it's tough, right? You just really don't know. You can't plan your time.
Right.
You have to give up a lot of personal things, right? You probably ended up missing friends' weddings and things like that because you had jobs. Now that you mm-hmm. are an entrepreneur, you have a little more control over your time. What do you love to do when you're actually not working? Like, how do you shut off the work brain, and how do you spend your time?
So, you know, I work a lot, you know, and there's some time that I take off. I love being with my family. I love being with my friends, but I love what I do. I really don't. It's like, I think there are two types of people when it comes to whatever it is that you decide to do in life. There are those who actually work really well under a system of working for someone. That is not a knock to anyone. Some people just love structure and love order. And, you know, I know people who have bosses who are way more successful than I am. And then there are those who know that they have to figure it out themselves. And I always knew that. I never had a job since I graduated from college. Even when you're a model, you work for yourself. You're self-employed. You're your own boss. You could say no. You could say yes. You could say, yeah, I want to go to Italy for a week. No, I don't want to do this. So I always wanted that for myself. So that was always, I don't know if that was always a plan, but that was where I knew that I'd probably end up. when it came to fragrance.
Chris, I love this conversation. We could probably talk for hours, so I hope to get to spend time with you in real life soon. Okay, we have a few minutes for fan questions, Chris. Oh gosh, there's so many good questions here. Oh, let's get to this one because I mentioned it in the intro, but we didn't have time to chat about it. Someone wants to know, what is the League of Gentlemen? It sounds actually incredibly mysterious. What is that all about?
So I was part of a group called Fashion for Development, where they promoted, green, what's the word for it? The conscious, use less water and fashion and all those things. And in it was like most of these powerful women from all over the world, which was incredible to be a part of. But then I decided to kind of, create a League of Gentlemen to kind of lift those women up within the group. So we had presidents from other countries be part of it. And it just sounded really cool, a League of Gentlemen. So, it was great. I mean, we went to all the events and we spoke and we basically just kind of leaned on the most powerful women in the world to try to promote, sustainability and fashion around the world. So that was a great group to be a part of.
It sounds like a movie title or a book title.
Yeah, The League.
Okay. These are really good questions. I'm going to pick this one. What two things would you tell your younger self if you could?
Wow. What two things would I tell my younger self? I would tell him, don't be afraid, because you're going to lose some things. You're going to get hurt in some ways, but don't be afraid because it will all be okay. And secondly, I would tell him, what you're going to end up doing in your life is right in front of you. Pay attention. It's there. Pay attention. Live your life, have fun, run around. But whatever is happening, just notice it and make sure you remember it. Because now looking back, all the things were right in front of me that ended up being my life.
I love that. Okay, last question. This is very timely. It's a good question. The year you went to the Met Gala for Ralph Lauren, what was the theme?
Oh, I don't remember the theme, but I do know this. Was it goth? I think goth was the theme. Goth was the theme. And I remember, this is a great story. I was sitting at this incredible table, like Alicia Keys was at my table, and Miguel and all these people. And I get up and I go to the bathroom. And I'm walking around the room, and it's like, you're like in a room with like Giselle and Tom Brady, and it's just like, it just doesn't really make any sense, to be honest. And I'm walking, and Andre Leon Talley, when I'm coming back in the bathroom, he says, come here. And he says, who are you? And I said, sir, no, my name is Chris. I've been in the fashion world for a long time. He was like, because honey, when you walked by, the whole air got sucked out of this room. And I said, thank you, thank you, thank you. And then I ended up taking a picture with him and Alicia Keys and a few other, Carrie Washington, she was in the picture. And that is one of my favorite pictures in my life when it came to fashion, because we're all laughing. He's laughing so hard, his eyes are closed. I must have said something funny. And after he passed away, it was just like, wow, this is just one of these moments you'll never be able to tell people and they'll believe you. But now you can actually show it. It's lamented. It's like in a photo. So that was my most incredible memory. Everything else was a blur. But that memory of the Met Gala, I'll never, ever, ever forget.
I love that story. It makes me think of watching your Instagram. You were in a pretty impressive room. I think it was end of January in LA. I don't remember what the event was, but when I was looking at the pictures, you were there. Ron Robinson was there, who's been a guest on the show. So a lot of people in the industry were there. And I'm like, this is so crazy. What was that? Do you remember this event was?
I think we were in...
It was a very fancy party. It was maybe there were a lot of fashion people there, but I don't know fashion people. There were a lot of beauty people there. And it was
I just saw Ron the other night too.
It was a real moment. And it was end of January.
Oh, yes. Yes. It was the 15% pledge gala. Yes. And everyone was like dressed up to the nines, and like everyone who's anyone in beauty was there or fashion. That was incredible. And I think, is that the New York Public Library, I believe? Yeah.
That was an impressive room also.
Yeah.
Chris, you did it. We spent 45 minutes well together. I think that was a very good use of our time. I love hearing from you. I love the story.
Thank you.
I would like to spend time with you in real life so we'll find each other.
I hope so.
And this was our 257th episode, so thanks for being a part of our show.
Congratulations to you. That's incredible. Wow.
And for our listeners, thank you so much for joining us. If you like this episode, please rate and review. And as always, make sure you're following us on your favorite podcast platform and Instagram to stay up to date on upcoming episodes and all the fun we have along the way. Thanks so much for joining us. Chris, have a great day. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.